Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Howdy doody, listeners. It's me, Jinx Monsoon, here with a brand new episode of Hi Jinx with me, Jinx Monsoon. Today, our guest, actor Theo Germain, is going to talk all about working on the shows The Politician, Work in Progress, as well as tell us what it's like subverting gender norms in Hollywood today. And we're going to discuss one of my very favorite subjects, Bette Midler. So hunker down and sink your teeth into some new hijinks.
Forever Dog.
Everyone, I'm Jinx Monsoon, and welcome to Hi Jinx, a podcast where I, an internationally tolerated drag superstar, get to interview compelling and fascinating people about how they became who they are and why they do what they do. Today, we are joined by actor and hottie, Theo Germain. Hi, Theo.
Hi, Jinx.
You did it perfect. Oh, it's like you're an actor or something.
Oh, God.
Well, Theo, my listeners will likely know you from Netflix's The Politician, where you play James Sullivan, a focused and driven young campaign manager. How did that role come to exist? How did you end up in that role? What was that experience like?
I can honestly say it was a really, really wild experience for me. I was working in Chicago as an actor, and I had primarily done stuff on stage, but I had an agent, and I was like on the grind and doing tons of auditions for, you know, TV and film and things like that. And honestly, just like wasn't booking things. It's still kind of like slim pickings for casting opportunities for trans and non-binary people to a certain extent. It gets a little bit better every year, but that was 2018. So it was like, I just got this breakdown one day, and the character listing was for James, who was a transgender male, but it wasn't something that was talked about in the sides. And he just kind of got to like, you know, be this asshole campaign manager who got to do his thing. And I was like, oh, this is really exciting. Like, I don't have to talk about gender for once, you know, because I do all the time, and people recruit you to do, right. People recruit us to do it all the time. Right.
Yeah.
I just did a self tape. I did it on a day. It was like a really, really, really hot day. And I had 3 auditions in one day. And this was, I think, the last one that I did. And I was like, on my bike and biking around the city to get from one audition to another audition. I taped for this in my agent's office. I was real nervous about it. We probably did like 8 takes. And the show was getting really, really close to filming. It was supposed to start filming basically within the week that I had auditioned. And I kind of got a crash course about, you know, what happens if you're going to get cast in a show, like instantly. So I taped for the show on Thursday, felt okay about it. And 24 hours later, got a call from my agents who were like, they really liked your tape. We might be hearing more about this weekend. We don't know exactly what's going on. And I just was like, oh, I don't know what's happening. But I was really excited. And then that weekend learned that I was going to be getting a screen test, but instead of having to fly to Los Angeles or New York, they were like, we're just going to use your tape. And screen tests, I guess, kind of go different ways all the time. So this was an interesting first experience to have with getting this far in a casting situation. So they sent this tape, this self-tape in, used it as a screen test, and or screen tested it. And like a day after that happened, I was at work and got another call from my agents who were like, we got to talk to you after you get off work. You know, there's some more information that we learned about like what's going on with this casting. And I called my agents after work and was like, what's going on? And they basically were like, we don't know exactly what happened, but you have an offer. And they want to give you the role. And I was like, it was like 4 days, 4 days of like going from, you know, I was like working in a coffee shop. I had finished a theater contract in the previous month. And I was like applying for food stamps because I was just, it was, everything was up in the air. And then all of a sudden I booked this really amazing job. And then they were like, now you have to drop everything and move to Los mm-hmm. Angeles now. And I was like, oh, what? So I just kind of said yes to everything, honestly, because I was like, you know, what are you going to do? This is an amazing opportunity. I grew up being a fan of Ryan Murphy. You know, one of my favorite things that he's done is Running with Scissors, the movie. It's one of my favorite films. And I was like, you know, an American Horror Story fan. I was really into Glee. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. I can't believe this is happening. And I got off the plane in Los Angeles, immediately went to a costume fitting and just like started instantly, and then was filming like a week later. And that's it was so intense, honestly. Like I, like looking back, I realized that like there was a lot of anxiety that I was dealing with, and like a lot of, you know, imposter syndrome that I think I dealt with too, because I was like with veteran actors who were super famous, and like not just that, but like epic people like Jessica Lange, mm-hmm. you know, who I got to film a couple of days with, which was like really, really exciting. So yeah, it was like this, sometimes people will be like, you know, what was your experience getting cast in the show and like all of this stuff happening? And I'll respond and I'll just say, have you ever seen the movie Babe, Pig in the City? Because I'm from a really small town. I'm from a really, really small town. Like I grew up in a very small town in central Illinois that has like 5,000 people. There were not really a lot of opportunities for art. I, you know, was in like a dinky little theater, you know, theater club at my high school where, mm-hmm. you know, the flats that we were using to do shows were so old that they were falling apart. I also was like really excited. I'm always excited to do content that like has any level of like risque in it, because the place where I grew up was also so conservative that like they wouldn't even let us do zombie prom. As a musical, like we were constantly doing things like The Sound of Music, you know, over and over again. So like it literally was like a whirlwind, like I am not in Kansas anymore sort of situation. It changed my life radically.
What did you have to leave behind? Like I can't even imagine leaving the city you were living in 4 days later, just being thrown into LA culture.
I had to leave my, I mean, I, it's not like I left, I guess it's not like I left, like I felt anything behind because I was still talking to folks, but I definitely felt like I chose to leave some socializing behind because it was like, you know, I didn't know when I was going to come back. I just knew that I was moving at some point. So it was the potential for me to just like have no idea when I was going to see people in person again. Because most of my friend base and my partner, you know, live in Chicago. And I had been working in theater community for like 2 or 3 years. And there were a lot of connections that I'd made there. And I was suddenly going from a city that was very theater focused to something that was like not, you know, as theater focused and was more film and TV. And it also was maybe like leaving a little bit of a smaller mindset behind, whether or not I was ready, like actually ready to grow. I hope that makes sense. So like philosophically, like there's a lot that I felt like I left behind, and a lot that I was like, you know, are you going to be anxious about this and freak out about it? Or are you just going to be like, I got this, like, and even if I don't got this, I'm going to fake it until I make it.
Yeah, sometimes that's the best we can do is just kind of fake it till we make it, especially when it's something that like pursuing a career as demanding as a TV entertainment career, it really does kind of, it becomes all encompassing. But if you know that it's something that you want, it is ultimately, you do have to make the decision, like, is this something I'm going to pursue? And knowing that I'm going to be kind of figuring it out as I go along. And I think one similarity we might have is the concept of overnight success.
Yes.
Like you said, you had about 4 days between auditioning and getting the role and having to pretty much change your whole lifestyle. And my success was I had a little bit more time to adjust. You know, we filmed Drag Race, and then I had, I think, about 5 or 6 months before it started airing. And then when it started airing, it took a while for people to like kind of get into me, I guess. I wasn't one of the front runners right away, so it took a little while for people to kind of start getting on board the Jinx Monsoon train. But then when things started to pick up, it literally went from I lived my whole life in the Pacific Northwest and this is all I've ever known, and the next thing I know, I'm flying around the world and my schedule's crazy, and every queer person I interact with now has some understanding of who I am, and that really shifts everything, you know. And the queer community itself, even though it's a global community, I feel like it's also a very tight-knit community, and it's not hard for information in LA to make it to New York within an hour, you know, and next thing you know, your friends in London are texting you, did you just film a pilot, you know?
So. Yes. God, I mean, and that's like, I met someone I've done burlesque. I've not done drag before. Mm-hmm. And I honestly imagine that your trajectory of work would be even more challenging than just like going and doing acting, because it's like I don't know. That's just my thought. Is that I imagine that it is like even more, it's harder. I don't know.
I was also working in theater before Drag Race, and that was the trajectory I was on. But I knew what I wanted to do was be a performer, and I didn't necessarily care if that meant I was going to be doing drag or if I was going to be doing theater or TV or film. I just knew I wanted to be working as a professional performer for the rest of my life, and I was going to take any path to get me there. So I was doing drag on the weekends and rehearsals for plays on the weekdays, and then I'd have to take some time off of drag to do a musical or something. And then the next thing I know, you know, drag took over, and I was happy for that. But I do kind of miss the ability to show up, play a role, take the costume off, and then no one really is concerned with me anymore. Whereas Jinx and Jarek, the human who plays Jinx Monsoon, have merged into one, and now we are both Jinx 2.0. And it does change pretty much everything. And you mentioned imposter syndrome, and I only like kind of recently realized, oh, that's what that was. Oh, that nagging anxiety that I've tricked everyone into liking me. Okay. Oh, it's a thing. So absolutely hear you on all of that. The burning question in my mind is, how much, if at all, did you get to interact with Bette Midler? And please tell me everything.
I got to think. So in season one, Bette Midler's character and everyone goes to New York, new characters show up. And mm-hmm. I remember running into Bette, I think once at the very, very end of season one, and just getting to say hi. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God. I was really really, really overwhelmed by all of the really super famous people that were working on the show. And then before we started season two, Bette runs an event. There's an organization that she runs that helps helps with like parks and like natural, mm-hmm. you know, natural land and things like that in New York. So people have, you know, parks to go to and stuff like that. And I went to a Halloween ball that she hosted before we started filming season two. So I went to this like really, really intense costume party.
So this was a Halloween ball for the New York Restoration Project.
Yes, it was like a big fundraiser. Ben was performing at this, because there were performances that were happening at the event. It was a dinner. It was a costume ball. I dressed up like Coraline. and met her then, and she just like remembered who I was and was like, "It's very nice to see you, Theo." And I was like, "Oh." And then I didn't have a lot of days working with her on season two, but I got to have a couple of conversations with her, and she was really cool. But I didn't get to work with her as much as some of the other actors did, just mm-hmm. because of, you know, how the season was written. But anytime that I did get to interact with her, I was really excited. And also it was just like, I'm not really someone who gets like, you know, very fanboyish, because I'm mm-hmm. always thinking about like, you know, if somebody is of this, you know, performance status or of this notoriety status, they probably deal with this stuff all the time. There's probably mm-hmm. people always being like, "Oh my God." But on the inside, I was like, hocus pocus, like Beaches, like all of these movies that I had seen growing up. And I also was really interested in her career, because she's done so much, and it's like she's done a lot of things that are really successful. She's done some things that are flops. And like, I'm very interested in people who have this like diverse sort of career trajectory. And she has a pretty diverse career trajectory.
Oh yeah.
And a lot of different kinds of things, you know, so it's cool.
Yeah. And for someone who kind of, you know, reads kind of matronly today, because, you know, I think she's in her 70s and, you know, but she still has so much vibrancy and so much like sexuality and sex appeal, and fell in love with her all over again for like the 18,000th time when she did Hello, Dolly. But I also just love knowing that her career started in bathhouses performing queer men between their fuck sessions, you know?
Yes.
And that's something that, you know, we must never forget mm-hmm. that Bette has been an ally from the beginning. And I think a queer icon who, though being a cis straight woman, has been queer adjacent the entire time. And to me, she is just the patron saint of all things gay right now for me.
Yes. I didn't know that specifically until I think we started filming. We did filming the fall of 2019 and then wrapped like right before COVID got really, really bad in the United mm-hmm. States. And I was like, "Oh my God, you've got to be kidding me." Like, she was working in bathhouses. This is just like, that's just what I wanted. That's just how I wanted her to have started her career.
And Bette Midler is just one of many superstar names on The Politician. Judith Light, Gwyneth Paltrow, Ben Platt, and you mentioned Jessica Lange. So are you pretty good at containing your fanboy side? I'll be completely honest. When I meet a celebrity that, like, it blows my mind that I'm meeting them, I have to get a little bit of gushing out of the way. Otherwise, I will fret about it for the rest of my life. Like, why didn't you tell Kathy and Jimmy how much you loved her in Hocus Pocus? You know, and I love how you can, it always comes back to Hocus Pocus, but.
I mean, the movie is so iconic. You know, I mean, that movie, there's so many ways that it influenced me. And I think especially the Doug Jones, who plays Billy, mm-hmm. the zombie in that movie. I think that character specifically too made me be like, "Whoa, I want to dress up in costumes for a living."
Oh, yeah.
I love it.
And he's like the character actor for prosthetic work. I didn't realize until recently, unless I'm mistaken, but if you watch Discovery. Yes. If you watch Discovery, which, oh my God, Discovery, the queerest Star Trek show of the Star Trek franchise. So much
I'm
stuff.
I'm so glad you're talking about Star Trek.
I love it so much because I'm a Star Trek fan anyway, but Discovery is just like really leaning into the queerness of Star Trek. And what makes sense about being set so far into the future, it's like, of course there's going to be more a wider breadth of gender representation and sexuality and stuff in a sci-fi future. And I'm glad we're finally talking about it. but he also plays plays an alien in that. I guess I don't know that.
Yeah, he plays
call it an alien in a.
Yeah, yes. He's a Kelvian.
Kelvian, yes.
Yes.
And it's amazing how much life he can breathe into a character, even though he's wearing like full body prosthetics. So I'm glad. But we're not talking about him right now. We're talking about you. The original question was, how do you contain that? Like, how do you or do you contain that fanboy side when you're working with such big names?
I honestly think that sometimes I can get a little shy and I'm like, oh, I just like, what would be the right thing to say that like wouldn't annoy them or something. And then I end up kind of not saying anything. And then sometimes I have internal panic because I'm like, oh no, this person was really influential in my life. Like when I met, Jessica Lange, I was, we were filming one day and we were sitting next to each other, and she was eating some, it was like it was a lunch break, and she was eating some beans and rice and she was just super chill. I was sitting next to her and trying to think of what I wanted to say to her. And then I remembered suddenly, like I had this flashback of when I was really, really little watching King Kong for the first time. Mm-hmm. And I realized, I was like, I'm sitting next to somebody who was part of my queer awakening as a child, because I remember her playing this character in King Kong and being like, whoa, this lady is really, really hot. I don't know what's going on. And then she's right there. And I was like, oh, yeah. I had a crush on you when I was 6 years old, which I didn't tell her, which I probably would tell her now. Why not?
I can relate with, like, sometimes I have anxiety because I'm like, oh my gosh, if I say this, it could be the wrong thing. And then maybe I say it and then like a week later, I'm like, did I alienate that person? Did I make them feel uncomfortable? But then if I don't say it, I spend the rest of my life wondering like, oh my gosh, I hope they know how important they are to me. And it's always like such a funny dance. And I think performers who were a part of our queer awakening, or I also say like when I've met people that I used to lip sync to, like I almost fainted when I met Kristen Chenoweth because I lip synced to her for life much of my early life, and like Devin Green as well. I lip synced to comedy videos of hers. So when I met her, I was like, I can't believe the voice that I know inside and out is like speaking to me right now. And it really shrinks your world and blows your mind a little bit.
Yeah, that's really surreal. Wow.
Yeah. you also work on the show, Work in Progress. And the character you portray is non-binary.
The character's name is Chris. He identifies as a trans man. So he's like, he's, you know, trans masculine, but he is not the type of person who is very interested in passing, air quotes, you know, super hard. He's not really interested in like, I want to specifically look this way. You know, he is someone who, as like I interpreted him, was very comfortable with most parts of his identity, and was just, you know, kind of like an androgynous looking person who identifies mostly as male.
You mentioned earlier kind of like you have to talk about gender a lot because it kind of gets put on you to talk about gender. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you enjoy? Do you find it stressful or?
It kind of both. Sometimes I'm like, yes, I know what I'm talking about. And sometimes mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, I talked about this a lot. I would like to talk about dogs or books or something else, you yes. know, or my favorite sport. but I kind of doing stuff that it's funny that you said mascot. Cause I was a mascot in high school. When I came out initially, because of the area that I grew up in and because of the lack of experience that or exposure that people around me, including some people in my family had, there was a lot of like, what the hell is this? Mm-hmm. And it was really, really like rocky and like really not very good. And so I think that something that I started doing when I was like 18, 19 years old was I started getting onto a lot of panels and started doing a lot of public speaking about trans health and like, this is what the life experience of, you know, one type of trans person is. So I'm really used to kind of putting, you know, putting the 101 or the 102 hat on to like talk mm-hmm. about gender or like, you know, if there's some kind of role where gender is a little more in your face, I'm like, that's something that I can, you know, that I can totally do. Mm-hmm. But I think that it definitely gets tiring because, you know, there's so many people that are outside of your, there's so many people that are outside of your perspective who maybe are not doing any other research on their own besides like listening to what you are saying specifically, if that makes mm-hmm. sense. And so I guess that would lead me to say that I have felt kind of like put into a mascot or et cetera position on occasion. But it's kind of just the nature of the industry. I think we're in this really weird spot where it's like, there's so much progress that has been made, but there's so much progress that has not been made. And there's mm-hmm. like reversals that are happening in the country, like with all the, you know, fucked up legislature that's happening against trans youth. And I kind of just try to see if, you know, certain opportunities are worth it to me. I kind of went off on a tangent there, but I think about it a lot. It's we're in a really, really weird spot in the industry of, you know, performance. And I think that extends, you know, that extends to a lot of more commercialized drag, you know, too, I think.
Yeah. Well, I think we're at this place where, and I think progress ebbs and flows. And sometimes we can lose sight of that, especially when we're in a long upswing. You know, I think we experienced, and I don't want to necessarily attribute it to who was president at the time, but more or less we experienced a steady 8 years of like an upswing. Mm-hmm. And then as with so many things, but with progress, when you experience a big upswing, you're going to experience the backlash and the pushback from it. From people on the other side of people who are counter progress. I have no problem calling them that. Pushing back because they feel threatened, you know. And then we witnessed that in many big ways. And now we are at this very interesting time in mainstream media and mainstream entertainment where we see a lot of projects making really good attempts at inclusivity and telling new stories and letting people from those backgrounds and from those demographics tell their own stories. And then we also see a lot of tokenizing and a lot of like, we'll just plop one person in here to show ourselves as progressive, but we're not actually doing any work beyond that, you know.
Yes,
and I think that's a very interesting time. Yeah, it's an interesting time to be a gender non-conforming person, whether you're trans or non-binary or any way that you transgress the gender binary and what we've been taught about gender. It's a very interesting time because it's like you can find yourself either playing a catchphrase or you can find yourself like being the spiritual guru who has to fix gender for everyone. And I just want to play roles that I like. You know?
Right. Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yes. Yes. A lot of, I was having a conversation with one of my friends recently who is a trans feminine non-binary person. Mm-hmm. And we were like, what do you get called in for? And I was like, I get called in for teenagers, mm-hmm. A lot, which I'm like, oh, I get called in for a lot of teenagers. And they were like, I get called in for like flamboyant gay characters, some trans characters, and I get called in for a bunch of doctors for some reason. Mm-hmm. But still, like, there's just, yeah, it's like we are not getting the opportunities that like we truly want. Mm-hmm. And to a certain extent, we're not going to because of the progress that has not been made. Mm-hmm. Unless we're like able to get more of us into leadership positions to like write more stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like, I mean, pretty much I get called in for drag queen roles. And pretty much. And I'm absolutely not complaining. Like, I've gotten to auditions for some really great things. And even when I don't get the role, it's exciting to even have gotten to this point, you know, where I'm being considered for something. But mostly I get called in for drag queen roles. Occasionally that drag queen will also be non-binary and there will be some conversation about gender. But mostly what I want casting directors and writers and producers to start looking at is... maybe this character that you saw one way could be interpreted a different way. And like, you know, like what I wish that performers had a little bit more agency in saying like, okay, I know you called me in for the drag queen, but I'd actually love to play the demon. And who says that a demon has to be gender conforming, you know, or like, yes. And I do a lot of voiceover work, and that's where I think I flex my acting muscles actually the most, is because I can voice a huge variety of characters, and what I look like and how I present is not always so important, you know. and with animation, period, it's like you get more non-traditional roles. Like I am, you know, I voiced like a hair monster on a kid's show once. And it was like, I think she was femme, but she was a hair monster. Who cares?
You know? Like,
I just had to voice a hair monster. That's as far as that conversation went. So, yes, I think the consensus is we've made a lot of progress and damn, do we still have a lot farther to go. Work that I saw on Work in Progress, I think, I don't know, but it feels like it's written by people who share the experiences of the characters. Am I correct?
There's a lot in the show that is kind of autobiographical, mm-hmm. and some of it is based in experiences that Abby, the main character, star of the show, mm-hmm. writer, fearless leader, yes. Some of them
that's
are
Abby McNanny
Abby McEnany.
McEnany, there we go.
Chris is actually based off of a real person who Abby dated, mm-hmm. At one point. It was a similar sort of thing where in the show, Abby mistakes Chris for a very, very butch lesbian, which is like mm-hmm. very similar to I think my understanding of what happened when she met this person that she dated for a little while. I don't know exactly all of the details of relationships or things like that and how it lines up with what happens in the show. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of truth in Chris because he was very, very, very much based off of someone that Abby knew, who she still close with and is decent friends with, and told me that she went to their wedding, which was really cool. So Chris specifically, I mean, there's a lot of ways that James was really, really exciting, because it was like, oh, I just got to play this like snotty, you know, rich, you know, like white high school boy who like, you know, enough said about that. I was like, oh, I didn't have this opportunity to do so in high school. This is very interesting. Yeah. Interesting, like being in these shoes for a little bit. But yeah, Chris was very, very close to my heart, because he was a Midwestern boy who clearly comes from somewhat of a traumatic background, moves to Chicago to kind of, you know, find his community, make friends, live his life, just be himself. He's very relaxed and comfortable with who he is. All of that just made me feel really excited. The project started off as a web series or a pilot. Mm-hmm. And we filmed the pilot in 2018. So I actually filmed the first episode of Work in Progress was filmed before The Politician. Mm-hmm. And the pilot of Work in Progress got into a program at Sundance, and then from there was picked up to Showtime. And then the rest of the season was shot in the summer of 2019. But when I got to read for him the first time, I instantly was like, this is exactly what, you know, this is exactly the type of opportunity that I want to have. I cannot believe that this is available to me right now. I was so, so excited.
I was going to say congratulations and thank you. And because I remember the episode, it was a while that we watched it. And it was one of those things, my partner and I started watching it, and then he had to go back to the UK, and he can't access it from whatever UK devices he's using. So I have to wait to get back into it until he comes back. But I remember watching the episode where Abby has the conversation with Chris about being a trans man mistaken for a butch lesbian. And I just, even though that's so different from my own story, I thought that scene played so well, because it was two people having a conversation that I think we are sometimes scared to have with someone because we don't want to say the wrong thing. But yes. I do think these conversations, when approached with love and compassion, you can make a mistake and you can figure it out through the conversation, and don't be scared to have the conversation, as long as you're willing to be like compassionate and empathetic and not like bring all of your own baggage into the conversation. Like,
yeah.
I have lots of guys. Oh my God. I have lots of guys. But I have, I have lots of experiences with guys on like Grindr, telling me they're really into femboys. And I'm like, well, I don't identify as a femboy. I identify as a trans femme non-binary person. And then they're like, oh, so you're a crossdresser. And I'm like, well, I'm a drag queen. And, I don't use the term crossdresser, but I've had those conversations go in a really like positive way, where they're just earnestly wanting to understand better. And then I've had those conversations go in less positive ways. But what I liked about the scene, and what I'm getting to, is that Abby was like, probably had never found himself attracted to a trans man before, like was interested at first, thinking that Chris was a butch lesbian. And then in the conversation, and by the end of the conversation, is like, wait, I am attracted to this person, and I'm going to pursue this, even though it doesn't line up with what I previously thought was, you know, the extent of like a limitation for me. And I think more people are trans amorous than they would No, because I think we are so taught what it means to be trans, what it means to be attracted to a trans person, that we sometimes like put up a roadblock where there doesn't need to be one. And I loved watching a scene where that roadblock gets taken down and they say yes to this experience. And that's what I found really, really beautiful about it.
Yeah, I agree. I was excited by the writing in which that, you know, and it's like, instead of the character being like, oh, what does this mean? It was just like, well, I guess that I'm someone who's into a lot of women, and now I'm also into people who are trans, and that's just how it is. And that, you know, it's a very specific example that is a white example, you know, it's a positive representation, because it's like, I hope that people will watch that and be like, oh yeah, like I don't have to be like weird or go into a crisis or have shame because I'm attracted to a human being, yeah. You know, who maybe looks different than other human beings that I have been attracted to before. It's like, I'm someone who is like a very sexually fluid person. I have always mm-hmm. been that way. And so like, it's not something that I understand when people are like, what does this mean if I'm into this person? But you know, I guess that's something that a lot of people struggle with. You know.
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, I grew up, I came out at like 14 and had a very queer community here in Portland and met other people my age who are queer. And I've just known so many different people across the whole LGBTQIA+ community from a very early age on. And even so, I had to unlearn a lot of things, you know, like even though I met trans people at age 14 who were my age and going through all the same life stuff I was going through, and they were trans, it's like it wasn't until I heard the term non-binary that I was like, oh, there's a word for the way I feel as well, because I never thought I never thought of coming out in terms of my gender, because I thought, well, I'm not trans enough to call myself trans. And
I'm so sorry
I don't
that
want
you felt that way at some point.
Well,
no, just, you know, it's like we live in a society where like you are in, you know, it's like that's a thing. And I'm sorry that you felt, you know, that you felt unable to express yourself, you know, because of those things. You know?
Well, I mean, the journey. Yeah, I mean, like, and I'm sorry for that too, but then it's also like, I got to, because I didn't fully understand all this stuff about myself or embrace this stuff about myself until later in life, I got to be going through it in front of people, I mean, which was a double-edged sword. You know, I had a public career at that point, so I was kind of learning these things about myself while I had people watching me learn those things about myself. And so that can be stressful and anxiety-inducing, but also it has allowed me to, just by living my own story and just by telling my own story, then help someone else find that out about themselves even earlier in life than I did. And I think that's one of the beautiful things of, you know, when you live your truth unapologetically, sometimes that's enough to make positive change. And we talked about having to be a mascot or a figurehead for gender identity. But, you know, I think we are, within the LGBTQIA+ community, we are getting to a point where just living your life happily and unapologetically is part of doing the work to get us to that future we're all imagining, you know? So congratulations on being part of that, and congratulations on
also being part of that.
Thank you. What role does fashion play in your life? Attending red carpets as a gender nonconforming person, like, do you have fun with fashion? Is it an anxiety moment, or do you just kind of put on what you want to wear and then hit the red carpet?
I have not been to a lot of red carpets yet. Mm-hmm. I definitely remember when I was getting ready to go to the one with the politician, I was like, how gender do I want to present? Like, what do I want to wear? Mm-hmm. And fashion for me, Oh gosh. I have a lot of feelings about it because I really like clothes and style, but I also am like, there's so much waste in the fashion industry. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we are living in a climate crisis and I'm like, there's so much product that is still being made and there's so much product that is not being made ethically. So I'm really in a point where I'm trying to educate myself a lot more on, you know, fashion, especially sustainable fashion. Which is something that the customer, the politician, who's a really amazing person, kind of helped me get a head start on. And like, she taught me the value of like trying to avoid fast fashion if you can because of how it's produced. But so that's kind of like how I think politically. But my personal style, honestly, like I wear a lot of stuff that makes me look like it's 1993 and I'm at a grunge concert. Like I wear a lot of, I wear a lot of like ripped jeans. Mm-hmm. I really, really like platform boots. I have a lot of band t-shirts. And then sometimes I wear like lace, excessively lacy sorts of things. You know, I feel very fluid. Sometimes I'm like, yeah, I want to wear a suit. And sometimes I'm like, yes, put me in that dress. That's what I want to wear. But I haven't had a lot of opportunities to publicly like explore fashion. And there's not really any paparazzi in Chicago, which is where I live. So I'm able to live a little bit more anonymously. Yeah. Fashion is also something that I think about a lot because I'm like, I don't know, because I'm still kind of newer to being in the public and like having a little bit of a public image, so to speak. There's a lot that I'm like, how do I want to present? How do I want to look? What do I actually feel like wearing, you know, versus like, what is trendy or like what will help me get a job or something like that. But yeah, I have a lot of thoughts about fashion. When I was younger, when I was a child, I would dress up in costumes constantly and just like show up at school. Like I wanted every day to be Halloween. So I love dress up. Yeah. and I think that honestly, one of my favorite things about acting is getting to wear lots of different costumes. It's just like in my theater background has put me in a lot of positions where I do a lot of stuff that's like heavy makeup or like otherworldly creatures or things like that. I have like a Shakespeare background and I've like played the monsters and the fairies and things like that. So like I love fashion in air quotes in theater and in TV and film. And the clothes that I get to wear for work are a lot more exciting than what I wear what I wear every day. I mean, yeah, seriously, I'm oh no. Oh no, my iPad's getting noise. Sorry if that made a noise.
You're fine.
I really am just kind of like in my everyday life, like a jeans, t-shirt, flannel, very tall boots sort of person. I'm not super tall. So I like wearing things that make me a little bit taller. And I like educating myself on sustainable fashion.
Yeah.
Really, what's up?
I think where I relate is that I have to think so much about fashion for drag that then out of drag, all my clothing's black, and mostly it's like fitness clothes, for which is crazy since I like hate exercising. I'm not a big fitness person, but I say like if there was such a thing as yoga witch fashion, that's where I land.
Like, ooh, that's yoga, nice.
A yoga instructor who also practices witchcraft. That's what I just like.
Some people might also call that health goth.
Health goth. That's
or
a great term for it.
Sport goth.
I
wear a lot of black too. Oh.
It makes it so much easier as long as you match all
it
the blacks.
Is. Yes.
I have a couple questions that I always ask. It's way less to do with anything we've talked about thus far. And you can just answer from your gut. Don't worry about being a figurehead for anyone. Just tell us who you, Theo Germain, would consider your celebrity crush.
Ooh, oh my God. Oh, I gotta think about this. Oh, who's my celebrity crush? Oh my gosh. Daniel Craig. I think Daniel Craig is so hot.
I am so terrible with names. Dipper, pull up. I always remember people by their faces. But Dipper will have us a picture of Daniel Craig real quick. Or you can just tell me how I'd know him.
Oh, he's James Bond.
Oh!
Yeah.
Okay, so you're into daddies. Okay, good to know.
Oh, come on. Okay, you're right. Yes, Daniel Craig, I'm super into. Oh, God, who else? And am I like, oh, that person's really hot. I had a huge crush on Evan Rachel Wood for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Also just like a huge talent crush.
Mm-hmm.
Oh gosh. Yeah. Daniel Craig. I mean, and I'm big fans of these, you know, of these actors, you know, at the same time.
Yeah.
Yes. Daniel Craig, Evan Rachel Wood. Those are two people that I think are amazing.
I'll say my celebrity crush for today, is Joel Fry, who he's done. Okay, so he was on this silly show that I watch. I think it's a British produced show called Plebs, and it's about ancient Rome, but it's all British actors playing ancient Romans. There he is, and now he's in.
Oh, handsome! Oh my God, he's very handsome.
Now he's in Cruella. He plays Jasper in Cruella, which I just watched, and I was so excited to see him. I have such
I've
a crush
not
on Joel Fry.
Yet.
Cruella it's high camp, and it doesn't feel like a Disney movie. My partner said it feels more like a Marvel origin film rather than a Disney movie.
That's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah. It's very campy, and there's tons of amazing performances in it. And I will say I really enjoyed it, but I don't want to force that opinion on anyone else. But to watch it for the costumes and a lot of the very
Emma
character.
Emma Stone's voice.
Yeah, Emma Stone's voice. Emma Thompson is amazing in it. Jamie Demetrio is in it, who is the brother of one of my past guests, Natasha Demetrio. And he played he's only in a chunk of the movie, but his performance was amazing. So anyway, check it out for the performances and the costume.
Oh, I'm excited to watch it. I'm going to watch it soon. I'm very excited about it.
What is your go-to karaoke song?
Funny you should ask this question, because I have been terrified of karaoke for a long time. I've had issues with having a similar anxiety about karaoke as I have to improv. So I'm like, it's not rehearsed. Where are my lines? Sometimes I have the tendency to forget a lot of song lyrics, or think that somebody is saying something. I'm the person who like thinks that somebody's saying something else.
You know, I've learned a lot of songs phonetically, and then it's a rude awakening when you see the lyrics all spelled out for you.
Yes. But I decided that I was going to try to use the pandemic to get over my irrational fear of karaoke, because I really, really want to go to karaoke bars with my friends. I think that if I were to pick something, it would probably be something from musical theater, because I'm definitely secretly a musical theater guy. So it might be something from like Cabaret or Chicago, because I really like those flavor of musicals. Or it might be some kind of song that was very popular, you know, between the years of like 1998 and 2006. I listened to a lot of like emo music and things like that, you know, when I was in high school and middle school. So it probably would be like Fall Out Boy, or like, you know,
I don't know if this is a premonition or a vision, but I feel like I can see you singing One Hand in My Pocket from Jagged Little Pill.
One
hand in my pocket.
I would probably have to change the key. That's actually like spot on. That's something that I would totally do.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. Oh, look, I'm getting to know so much about you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for our conversation today, Theo. Congratulations, and I'm wishing you all the continued success.
Same.
And I hope you get more red carpet moments so you can keep playing around with what to wear on a red carpet.
Thank you. Thank
it's always
you,
such a mystery. Where can my listeners find you on social media?
Oh, I'm just on Twitter and Instagram at my name, Theo Germain. Perfect. I'm not like super active on social media right now because I'm really tired.
Congratulations. Yeah. I'm trying to detox myself.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That is where you can find me. I also have a Facebook page, but I don't really use it very much.
Let's leave it out because I think Facebook's on the way out, but I won't say it too loudly in case Facebook's listening, you know, through my iPhone or whatever. But thank you so much for being such a wonderful guest today, Theo Germain.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, perfect. Sorry, I was going into my robotic, like... You're so considerate. I should have left room for for you to be kind in return. But thank you, Theo. And thanks so much for listening to Hijinks here on the Forever Dog and Moguls of Media Network. My name is Jinx Monsoon, and we have new episodes every Wednesday. So make sure to search for Hijinks on your favorite podcast app and hit subscribe. You can follow me at The Jinx on Instagram or Jinx Monsoon everywhere else. And I'll see you next Wednesday for some more Hijinks.
Forever Dog.
To listen to Hijinks ad-free and one day early, sign up for Forever Dog Plus at foreverdogpodcasts.com/plus. Make sure to follow at Forever Dog Team and at Mom Podcasts on social and rate and review Hijinks 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hijinks is produced by Forever Dog and Moguls of Media, aka Mom, hosted by me, Jinx Monsoon, produced by Big Dipper, editing and sound design by Will Pitts, executive produced by Willem Belli, Alaska Thunderfuck, Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey.